Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
Oh, qué calor, qué calor, qué calor, qué calor.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. In the Heights is the hottest ticket on Broadway right now. It's a salsa hip-hop musical about immigrant Latino life in Manhattan's Washington Heights. Bodegas, the Lotto, a wise abuela teaching grandmotherly patience and faith, and streets full of impatience and passion. It's the American Dream with a hot new beat, and it's up for 13 Tony nominations, the biggest number on Broadway this year. This hour on Point, we'll get the story behind the story of In the Heights. You can join the conversation. Have you seen it on or off the Great White Way? Is this Latino America's Broadway coming out party? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And joining me now from New York are two In the Heights creators. Thomas Kail is director of the musical, first off-Broadway, then on, with its Broadway debut early this year. He's artistic director of Backhouse Productions and co-creator of the hip-hop theater troupe Freestyle Love Supreme. He's also a 2008 Tony Award nominee for Best Direction of a Musical for In the Heights. Thomas Kail, Tommy Kail, it's good to have you with us. Thanks for being here.
I'm pleased to be here. Thanks for having me.
And with us from New York, playwright Kiara Aligra Ahudes. She grew up in Latino West Philadelphia and was recruited to write the dialogue, the book, as they say, for In the Heights. She was a 2007 Pulitzer Prize finalist for her play Elliot. She's a 2008 Tony Award nominee as well for Best Book of a Musical for In the Heights. Kiara, thank you very much for being here.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So I guess first off, congratulations to both of you. It's been a long road, and it seems to be turning out just as everybody dreamed or began to dream. How did this begin to come together at the Go to Broadway stage, Tommy Kail? I mean, we know it's been incubated for a long, long time. When did it turn the corner to the Great White Way?
Last Sunday, it's something that, and Kiara obviously can speak to her incredibly fundamental involvement in a minute, I first heard a CD of the show in 2000, and it was from a college production that Lynn had done and a couple of my friends up at Wesleyan University.
You're talking there, Lin-Manuel Miranda, who's sort of the guy at way back the beginning of all this.
Way back in the
and
proto.
And still
in
starring in it, yeah.
Yes, and... I really responded immediately to this material and to this energy and to the score and this idea of a contemporary story being told with contemporary music and in the great tradition of musical theater. And, we just sort of sat down in the basement of the Drama Bookshop on 40th Street and started pushing the rock up the hill. And Bill Sherman, who is our co-arranger and co-orchestrator, was also there. And about a year later, after doing a series of workshops, we met our producers, and one of those producers introduced us to Kiara in the summer of 2004. So we've been working on it for about a year and a half, 2 years. At that point, Lynn was writing the book, music, and lyrics, and was in the show, and we knew we wanted to bring someone aboard to collaborate and find another storyteller, and we were fortunate enough to be bumped into Kiara.
You found a great one. Kiara, is this it? Is this the, fiddler on the roof for the Latino Americans? Is this the, Raisin in the Sun? Is this the musical that brings Latino culture into the great embrace of Broadway? And with that, what gives it some kind of American sanction? Do you look at it that way?
It's hard to... from a writing perspective to see things that way, because I'm just always trying to see things really through the eyes of every character in the scene. And in some ways I don't have that kind of larger take a step back and imagine like the greater context of it, or else I start to lose the focus.
The grit, right, the beat.
The focus of the story. But it's certainly why I decided to become a writer is to try to tell those generational stories, to at least attempt that. And it's one of the fun things about working on the show and about it getting such a large audience is I get to hear from people and their responses and how they think it relates to their cultural experiences. And certainly my mom certainly thinks that it tells the great story of her generation and of other generations. Yeah. But you know, you asked about turning the corner to Broadway. I think from an artistic perspective, it felt more just like a long continual loop, like a long round corner, long round turn, of step after step, and then we finally made it.
We'll have listeners who will have seen it recently, and some who will never have seen it. Let's listen to just a little bit. Here is a bit from In the Heights, and here you'll hear Lin-Manuel Miranda, and we'll hear a lot more about him. Grew up with one foot in Washington Heights. Was there at the beginning writing a lot of this when he was still in college at Wesleyan in Connecticut, and followed it on that great long curve that Kira just spoke about there, and now stars in it on Broadway. His character, Usnavi, inherits a bodega, corner store, from his parents, who died when he was young in the show. He runs it with his cousin Sonny, and here he's singing about the history of the store and how he dreams of retiring someday.
Street light choking on the heat. The world spins around while I'm frozen to my seat. The people that I know all keep on rolling down the street, but every day is different, so I'm switching up the beat. Cause my parents came with nothing, they got a little more. Sure, we're poor, but yo, at least we got the store. And it's all about the legacy they left with me is destiny. And one day I'll be on the beach with Sonny writing checks to me.
There's Lin-Manuel Miranda in the Heights and sort of belting out his story hip-hop style. Thomas Kail, you're the New Yorker here. Tell us about Washington Heights. Where is it? What's the character of the neighborhood?
Well, full disclosure, I'm from Alexandria, Virginia, originally.
distant suburb.
Yes, exactly. But, you know, one of the things that that Lin captured and Kiara captured so well about this neighborhood is the sense of life that is just spilling out of this community that has such pride in maintaining its integrity and trying to ensure that its stories are told. And I think that, you know, that's one of the struggles in our show is how does this community, which is so like many other communities across the world, deal with the transition, you know, of this ever-evolving city landscape. And, you know, and we're trying to capture this moment in time. You know, we're trying to catch, you know, some of the life and some of the spirit. And, you know, we musically, as well as through the character and the writing in the book, wanted to represent everybody's voice from whatever generation, you know, they were from with authenticity. And I think that Lin and Kiara have, you know, have captured that really beautifully.
Kiara, this is way up at the tip-top of Manhattan. You could say almost in the shadow of the George Washington Bridge. It was the New York Times where somebody said, you've got enough energy in this show to light that bridge up for years. It's not your hometown, but you spent time on those streets to get the flavor of it. Give us a description. You're a writer. What's Washington Heights?
Well, you know, when I got there and I started kind of wandering the streets aimlessly of Washington Heights, which is how I always start writing, just kind of taking walks and wandering and thinking, you know, that some of the things that struck me were that it's a community. It really is a community in a way that you don't necessarily feel when you get off of other subway stops in Manhattan. And, you know, there's lots of clues to that. You know, for instance, there's a lot of family-run businesses. You can tell going into some of the stores that, you know, there's a father and a son or two brothers working there, and they've probably opened up the store, and they're probably going to be the ones closing it that night. And they know the names of the people who come in, and they're their neighbors or their friends. And these are things that, you know, like you said, I'm from Philadelphia, and my family lives in the Latino community, the Puerto Rican community in Philadelphia, in North Philly. And these were things that I had experienced growing up too, just on a much larger and specifically New York scale, which is magical. You know, New York's magical in a way, in a really special way. You know, there were community murals in Washington Heights that told community stories. You could see that the daycares next to the churches were these community establishments, and so everything just kept saying community, community, and that in some ways the most interesting character that I kept seeing on the streets was the sum of all the characters and what it all added up to, the kind of collective feel of the blocks.
This is a story that takes place over a couple of 3 days, a July 4th weekend, where lots of conversations are underway, and what, relationships and passion affairs and would-be affairs, and a community trying to decide what its character is, how much it's tied to old cultures, old countries, Dominican Republic or elsewhere, how much it's New York, how much it's USA. Is there an answer at the end of the show, Kiara, where this Latino community comes down?
Well, I think there the answer is that everyone has to find their own path, and that, you know, being a part of this community doesn't mean that everyone is at the same point at all times. You know, there are characters who are struggling who, like me, were the first person to go to college in their family, or who are struggling to speak Spanish fluently, whereas their parents grew up speaking Spanish very fluently. There are characters who don't feel that Manhattan is their home and that they want to go back to the island where they came from and where the rest of their family is. But having those, you know, kind of asking those questions together on the same block under the same awnings, you know, where do I belong and who do I want to become? What is the relationship of those two things? You know, that's the answer they come up with, that they're on this path together. They're just at different points in the path.
Kiara Hudis, Tommy Cale, please stand by. Both up for Tonys for their roles in The Heights. Here's the title track from the big show on Broadway, 13 Tony nominations. You can join our conversation, 800-423-8255. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
That was abuela. She's not really my abuela, but she practically raised me. This corner is her escuela. Now, you probably thinking, I'm a creek. I never been north of 96th Street. Well, you must take the A train. Even farther than Harlem to northern Manhattan and maintain. Get off at 181st and take the escalator. I hope you're writing this down. I'm gonna test you later. I'm getting tested. Times are tough on this bodega. 2 months ago, somebody bought Ortega's. Our neighbors started packing up and picking up. And ever since the rents went up, it's gotten mad expensive. But we live with just enough.
In the Heights, I live the Heights. Start my day.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Broadway's rap salsa Latino sensation In the Heights, and its 13 Tony nominations for everything from Best Musical to Best Choreography to Best Score. The director is with us, Tommy Cale, and Kiara Hudis. She wrote the book for In the Heights and is up for a Tony herself for that 2008 Tony Award nominee for Best Book of a Musical. Behind us right now, No Me Diga from the show. You can join us. Have you seen it on Broadway or off? Is Broadway ready for a musical out of the Latino hood? Was it ready years ago with West Side Story and Maria, Puerto Rican roots and Jets and Sharks? And I guess there's this question. Does every American culture need to ultimately get its Broadway treatment, its Broadway blessing, whether it's Fiddler on the Roof or Raisin in the Sun or, I don't know, Oklahoma? 800-423-8255 is our number. 800-423-TALK. Kiara, Tommy, we've got lots of listeners who want to join the conversation. Susan's with us from Lincoln, Massachusetts. Susan, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Hi. Great. How's your barrio out there in Lincoln?
Oh, right. They don't get much of that in Lincoln. And I just, I was probably one of the first callers because I'm just so excited about this play. Saw it the first week it was on Broadway, took our 12-year-old daughter and our 13-year-old son, and we were all on the edge of our seats. And I've seen a lot of plays, starting with The Wiz and Pippin in the 70s, and I can't say that I've been as excited about anything as I have been, as I was about this play, and I can't wait to see it again.
Because of In the Heights on its own terms, do you have a Latino connection in the family? Did that matter?
No connection, but we just love the community and the passion, and we all love music, and, you know, my kids like a little different music than what I like, but I do love rap music, too, and we just love the energy, and we're just completely wrapped up in it. And I just have goosebumps listening to these little pieces of music, and I must get the soundtrack.
That's terrific.
It just came out.
Two thumbs up. Yes, it's just out. I've got it right here in my hand. You can have it all. Susan, thanks for that. Let's hear from Nashville, Tennessee. And Bob. Bob, you're on the air.
Yes, I am. Well, thank you. I have a little laryngitis going on, but I saw the play in April. And, well, I'm prejudiced. My daughter was one of the set designers for it, but we had the opportunity to get on stage and walk behind stage and meet people in it, and the enthusiasm was contagious. It was just like the same storyline being repeated with the people working on it. That's what I thought was so fascinating.
Bringing it right to the stage. They're up for a Tony on set design as well, so she must have done some good work in there. Is this a musical for Latinos or a musical for everybody, Bob?
I thought it was for everybody. I thought it was really inspiring. You know, maybe some of the story, people say the story's a little short or not deep or something, but I thought everything about it was good. And I really did like the enthusiasm from everybody I met that night. From the people sitting you in the aisle to the people on the stage and underneath the stage, all proud of it, and you could tell.
Yeah, you can hear it right in the music. There's no question. Let's get one more from Newport News, Virginia. Bill, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Congratulations on your awards. We saw the show about 3 weeks ago, and, we don't understand any Spanish at all. But the energy in the audience behind us and their laughter just gave us joy. And then the next day, we went and rode through the heights. And it's a little bit different from what's on stage, but certainly the Hispanic influence is still very visible up in the heights. So congratulations, folks.
Hey, that's great, Bill. Thank you very much. Kiara, a lot on the table there. Let's go first to the Spanish. There's Spanish language woven through what's largely English here. How did you decide when you and Lin-Manuel Miranda were writing here how much Spanish to use, how much kind of in-crowd joking? You heard Bill there in Newport News. He loved it, but he didn't get every little bit of it. How did you make the balance there?
Well, I deal with this in my writing a lot because I have a lot of characters who are bilingual, and I don't use actual literal translation. So if someone says a phrase in Spanish, I don't always literally translate it into English afterwards, but I sometimes kind of paraphrase it at the end of the line or give a context in a way that makes it so that I think the general audience can understand the line. And we also had producers who don't speak Spanish, so they were really helpful in just letting us know, oh, that line is confusing, I don't know what's being said, or no, it's perfectly clear what that character is communicating.
Yeah, and Thomas, how about on the hip-hop side? I mean, are you putting hip-hop forward here as a kind of Latino sound? Is it just the urban American sound now? There's plenty of salsa, there's merengue here as well. But a lot of what gets told through a kind of rapping performance. Is that Latino?
Well, I mean, not necessarily, not particularly. I mean, what we found in our love of hip-hop, our mutual love of hip-hop among the collaborators, was that hip-hop effectively is storytelling that's done to a rhythm or to a beat. Mm. And, you know, what we tried to do as we created the show was allow the listener to be embraced and the listener to understand immediately that they were on board and that we weren't doing anything that wasn't going to allow them to join us up on stage and in the audience. And so I think that, you know, the construction of the opening is one where those first couple verses are very similar to what happens in Shakespeare, where you try to let the ear, you know, get used to this new rhythm or this new language. And that's something that always happened to me when I go see Shakespeare. At a certain point, after the chorus comes out and exposes you to the sound, your ear clicks in and all of a sudden you understand it without having to be conscious of that. And so that's something that we tried very hard to do.
Kiara, how about it? I mean, here you are, you're writing dialogue. You'd write the book, which in musical parlance means you're writing the dialogue that's not in the songs. Now, does the hip-hop, the rap-performed dialogue count as not in the song or in the song?
No, that's part of the lyrics. So that's part of the lyrics, just like the sung languages also. But, you know, it was really fun collaborating. This was my first big commercial musical I worked on, so I was definitely quite nervous and somewhat in awe of the whole process, and also never thought anything would actually ever come of it, because this is the theater, for goodness sake. But as Lynn and I developed the show, you know, we wrote a lot in the same room together, and there was a lot of emailing and a lot of texting ideas, and so we actually ended up stealing a lot of each other's ideas, which was one of the fun parts of the process, where he'd come up with this great song, and you know, and I'd say, oh, I really like verse two, but I think it would actually be better as dialogue in scene six, not here. Or, you know, or I'd write a scene and he would kind of, as he said, cannibalize it and turn some of the language into lyrics. So there's a lot of back and forth. But the hip hop itself is part of the lyrics.
Let's hear a little bit right here that's not hip hop, but it gives us a sense of the storyline. Lin-Manuel Miranda playing this bodega owner right at the heart of everything here. His girlfriend, or would-be, Vanessa, played by Karen Olivo, works in a local hair salon in the Heights, but she dreams of leaving the barrio.
Neighborhood salon doesn't pay me what I want to be making, but I don't mind. As I sweep the curb, I can hear those turbo engines blazing a trail through the sky. I look up and think about the years gone by. But one day, I'm walking to JFK and I'm gonna fly. It won't be
Karen Olivo from In the Heights. Tommy Cale, I wonder how you decide. I mean, at that point, we can hear In the Heights clicking right into the mainstream of American musicals. That is a very, very familiar sound, moving and beautiful, but kind of a Broadway polish that we know well. So it brings me back to this balance question. You know, how much do you try and make a show absolutely distinctive to a neighborhood, to a singular culture, and how much for commercial reasons or you name it, do you, as a director, try to wrap it into what feels like a mainstream that will do the box office?
You know, my concern is on the storytelling, and I find that one of the things that I'm most interested in, that Lin and Kiara were also, as well as our music director and arranger, Alex, is that we wanted to make sure that, as I mentioned before, each voice was one that spoke the language, musically and otherwise, that seemed like it was relevant to them. And so, so in the context of our show, while Usnavi expresses himself mostly through hip hop and verse, you know, Benny at the Dispatch has a lot more soul, and there's much more R&B and traditional Broadway ballad mixed in. That Abuela has sort of a mambo vibe, and one of the things that, you know, that we kept on going back to, and Fiddler on the Roof was a huge touchstone for us. Is I was reminded of a story that I read about when they did Fiddler in Japan. One of the Japanese investors came up to one of the creators and said, I love this show. It's amazing, but how does it work in America? Because it's so Japanese. And there was nothing about the show that had changed, but through the authenticity of storytelling and the specificity of the work, it was able to transcend. And I think that we try to keep our focus on being honest to the moment and being authentic in the moment. And I think that's what allows people to get hooked in as quickly as you know as they can.
Yeah, let's do some testing on that. We've got somebody here who grew up in Washington Heights, Pat from Portsmouth, Rhode Island. Hi, Pat. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hi.
Yes, I did. I grew up on 174th Street between Amsterdam and Audubon.
All right, you're there.
I'm there. And my grandparents lived on 175th, and my other grandparents lived on 160th. So I'm totally immersed in the Heights.
Pat, Latino family or otherwise?
Nope. It was the community that I grew up in was very Irish American.
So here's another perspective. What do you see then in the show?
Well, I haven't seen it yet. I'm going to see it with my grammar school friend, my incarnation school friend, who also grew up in the Heights. We went all through school together, and I'm really excited to hear that it's still a neighborhood, that it still has the mom and pop stores, because that's what it was like when I grew up. You know, we had the vegetable guy and the butcher, and there was one bodega when I was a kid on 179th Street in St. Nicholas.
One bodega. So you might not necessarily have looked out and said to yourself, one day this will be the setting, you know, for the Latino American Broadway musical.
No, I didn't think it would be the setting for any musical, actually, except maybe a radical Catholic musical. It was a very Catholic neighborhood with lots of, we defined our friends and other neighborhoods by parishes rather than streets. Hmm. So you were from St. Rose of Lima, or you were from Incarnation, or you were from Good Shepherd.
Right.
But it was. I'm so happy to hear that the Heights. Well, actually, I took a tour a couple of years ago. I went to Highbridge Park, which I grew up right across the street from, and saw the tower and the pool and the walking bridge, or the footbridge, as we called it when we were kids. And there was apparently a big push to restore that park. And that made me very happy because I have nothing but great memories about the Heights.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. Pat's out there still waiting for the radical Irish Catholic musical to come out of the Heights.
But well, she might not get it in the Heights, but I will say this, that you know, a lot of the stories about how communities change, the landscape of communities do change over time, too. It's part of the American dream. And we do acknowledge the Irish history and roots in that neighborhood too. So hopefully you'll get a little bit of extra enjoyment out of that storyline.
Kiara, the neighborhood you grew up in, West Philadelphia, had its own Latino pocket, if you will. How was your neighborhood like and unlike Washington Heights in Manhattan?
You know, in some ways it was very similar, and in some ways it's different. My father was a My stepfather, actually, he was a small business owner, much like some of the characters in the musical. And, you know, it was through his groceries and through his apartment buildings that he was able to forge a sense of family and business ownership in the community that became very closely linked. You know, another example is that this abuela character who's in the show.
The grandmother, at least she plays the grandmother's role, yeah.
She's like the matriarch of the block, and amazingly enough, Lynn and I both had grandmothers who were very, very similar in our lives, and also in their community function. I mean, my grandmother, she came from Puerto Rico, from a town called Arecibo, which is, you know, fairly metropolitan, but still had a lot of agricultural business, and, you know, she came with her four daughters in the 60s, and continued to do what she had done in the island, which is have an open door policy in the middle of what some people might consider to be a dangerous neighborhood. But she never locked her door, and she always had a pot of food on the stove.
Not locked in the Heights either in the show here. Let's listen, if we can, to just a little bit, Kiara. This is from In the Heights, of Abuela Claudia, played by Olga Merides, recalling immigrating from Cuba in 1943.
Fresh off the boat in America, freezing in early December, a crowded city in 1943. Learning the ropes in America, en español I remember, dancing with Neo La Guardia, all of society welcoming mommy and me.
Olga Merides as Abuela Claudia there from In the Heights, thinking back to 1943. But of course, there's also an immigrant patina that's much more recent than that, and people, some in this show, Tommy Cale, still thinking whether or not to stay in the U.S. or even, you know, head back to the Dominican Republic or get out of town. But the anchor stays put in the end.
Well, you know, one of the things that I found in working on the show and just from my own experience, especially being in New York, is that for immigrants that are first generation, whether they're first or second generation, the idea of what is home and that question that we all struggle with no matter where we're from, and what that final destination is for Usnavi, who sees this as this moment in time before he can get back home, and home for him in the beginning of the show, you know, being represented as the island, you know, with the DR. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that, again, we wanted to really approach individually. What, you know, there are characters in this show, the ladies who run the salon, their home is Washington Heights, and that's very clear. And so the fact that their business rent went up and they have to be forced uptown, that's a different kind of displacement that's more local but is still as, you know, as heart-wrenching for them.
Home and flux all in play in the Heights. Tommy Cale directed, Kiara Hudis wrote the book. Listeners, you can join the conversation, 800-423-825. Here's Sunrise from In the Heights. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Well, how do you say kiss me?
Bless a man.
How do you say hold me?
Abrázame al amanecer at sunrise.
cruzando el camino por toda su mesa.
Oye, ¿qué pasó? Blackout, blackout. Vino el apagón, ay Dios. Oye, ¿qué pasó?
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Broadway's rap, salsa, Latino sensation In the Heights. 13 Tony nominations, the most of any show on Broadway, for everything from best musical to best choreography to best original score. Off Broadway for most of a year, just opened on Broadway a couple of months ago. It's making a huge splash. You can join the conversation. What do you think? Is this how Americans learn about each other, learn each other's dreams and struggles and cultures? Ultimately, on Broadway, and is it high time, is it past time that a Latino hit made the scene, this kind of scene on the Great White Way? We're at 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. Blackout behind us there from In the Heights. We've been joined by the director of the show, Thomas Kail in New York, and Kiara Alegria Hudes, who wrote the book, wrote the dialogue for In the Heights. Both of them with us from New York. We're joined right now from New York as well by Maria Hinojosa. She's host and managing editor of the weekly National Public Radio program Latino USA, and One-on-One with Maria Hinojosa on WGBH, senior correspondent for the PBS News Magazine TV series Now. Maria, thank you very much for being with us.
And in my free time, I actually go and watch In the Heights.
Yeah, good for you. You've seen it. You know the Latino world well. What kind of reception is this getting? Is this seen as a big deal? You know, finally our ship is coming on Broadway kind of moment, Maria.
Well, look, I mean, there have been a lot of Latino ships on Broadway. Some of them have sailed well, and some of them have, you know, struggled along. But I will tell you this. So that just puts it into a kind of historical context. In the Heights is not a sudden surprise of the Latino presence on Broadway. What it is that it is an amazingly successful story because, yes, I mean, as a Latina, my husband, who's Dominican, who can't stand musicals and was crying throughout this one, I mean, yes, there is absolutely a relationship because you see yourself reflected on Broadway with real stories and amazing music. But this is a story, one, about all New Yorkers, which is why I think it's a big hit in the city, because you don't have to be a Latino to get this story.
Because it's the immigrant story, essentially.
Well, it's the immigrant story, but it's also New Yorkers who survived through the that song that you were listening to, El Apagón, was the blackout. So every New Yorker experienced the blackout. So, you know, when you're seeing that reflected on stage and you're just happening to witness it through Washington Heights, it's something that you also as a New Yorker experienced. And finally, I think one of the great things about the show is that a lot of what I preach as a New Yorker, as a mother, as a writer, is a kind of organic diversity that you don't have to be hit over the head with it. You don't have to celebrate it in months. And this is what In the Heights is about. It reflects a kind of organic diversity in New York City where you've got, you know, this one of the stars of the show off to Stanford as a young Latina falling in love with an African American who's trying to learn Spanish. You know, everybody gets mixed up, and we're organically experiencing the diversity that is part of us.
Let's listen to a little bit of just that moment. Nina is that character in the show, played by Mandy Gonzalez, the first in her family to go to college. But in the show, she's lost her academic scholarship after her first year at Stanford. She gets upset at her childhood friend Benny, played by Christopher Jackson, the African-American character you mentioned, when he says the neighborhood is proud of her. Mandy Gonzalez playing Nina in the Heights. Maria Hinojosa, what is that about the tension over not wanting to be congratulated for what looks like, you know, the American up-and-out achievement path?
Well, look, everything is very complicated in a country like ours where you have so many class divisions that are becoming more and more clear. In fact, when I was listening into the earlier part of the conversation and Thomas was talking about, you know, the movement, the gentrification, this morning taking a cab in, a livery cab driven by a Dominican into my office on 33rd Street, I passed my old beauty salon on 106th in Columbus. It's a neighborhood where I lived, and it's changing. I don't know if she's going to make it. And so that story of In the Heights, again, it's a Latino story, but it's a New York story that all of us can identify with. And as a Latina, are you kidding? Taking my kids to go see this show? Oh, my God. We happen to be friends with Olga Meredith, who is nominated for a Tony for her role as Abuela.
Yes.
We love Olga. And after, you know, after we saw the performance now for the third time on Broadway, and my kids were actually on the stage for a second. I mean, their lives are transformed because of this show. And I think all of you guys, and certainly when I asked Lin-Manuel Miranda about this, they are transforming lives with this show, and that's amazing.
Kiara, do you feel a responsibility with that? The kids are staring straight at your production.
Thank you for saying that. I mean, I'm honored to hear you say that, and that means a lot to me. You know, I have a little sister who's 13 years younger than me, and I kind of, you know, when I write, I like to see if something is meaningful for her. And, you know, when I brought her to In the Heights, she said, you know, that's me up there. Those are my cousins up there. And, you know, that feeling is really special and does mean a lot. You know, we have a lot of school groups come to In the Heights too. And, there's a joke in a song where one of the characters says that she's Chile Dominican Rican, talking about all of the different backgrounds and ethnicities that she has, which I relate to because I have mixed ethnicity. And so do a lot of the characters in the show. And a woman stayed behind with her young daughter. And the woman said that's her daughter's exact background, amazingly.
Yeah.
And that her daughter said, that's me on stage, mommy. And, you know, that, I mean, that kind of stuff it's just amazing. You know, when I'm writing, I'm just trying to have fun and trying to get the lines correct and follow the emotional arc. And then you kind of sit back and you watch it starts to belong to the audience more than you. And it's a really special transition.
One of the things to me that's very powerful about the show is that at a time when you have a huge growing anti-immigrant sentiment that many really believe and perceive as an anti-Latino sentiment, the fact that then you can go to Broadway and you can see all of this amazing talent. I mean, there is amazing talent up on that stage. And, of course, in every Broadway show, you're going to see amazing talent. But when it's, you know, predominantly all Latino, I think that's a really important message at a moment in our history when what the messages that we're getting from people like Lou Dobbs, et cetera, is Latinos are a threat to who we are, you know, and yet you look on the stage and you can't tell which character there is legal or not legal. And I know now you've made reference to that in one of the to the demonstrations that happened.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is that in that sense, when you talk about a Latino success story on Broadway, absolutely. And you know what? We need it in this country desperately.
Tommy Cale, you're not Latino, but you're directing a musical. You can hear in Maria Hinojosa's report of her own kids the kind of hopes and dreams that it ends up carrying for Latino members of the audience. How does that feel? I mean, it must be sobering to kind of have that as your job.
You know, well, it's a great responsibility that I feel whenever I'm working on anything, and in this story in particular, to try to honor the storytelling and the storytellers. And you know, you spoke you know, so kindly about our show, Marie, and I really appreciate that. And I find that
it's all the truth. I swear, no one's saying that. I love it.
You know, and one of the things that I find is, you know, being a part of the energy of this show is something very palpable and tangible. And I work very, very hard to try to create a safe place where this kind of work can be done. And I think that there's an obligation that we all have as artists to try to adhere as closely to the, you know, to the things that we're passionate about and to the things that we believe in. And, you know, to create a story that's about this particular group of people that are working so hard to push their children further, to honor those who came before. When my grandmother, who is Jewish and grew up on 6th and D, finally got a chance to come see the show, the first thing she wanted to do was go and sit on that stoop with me and have my picture taken with her. And, you know, for it to speak to her, someone who is from a neighborhood as specific from a different part of, you know, the city and relate to it was it's incredibly moving. And so I'm just proud to be a part of it.
You know, Maria Hinojosa, I can't help thinking as I see the beautiful energy out of this show and all the excitement around it. But you put it up against the news, as you say. I mean, what was it? Just last week, there was the big raid on one of the biggest meat packing plants in the country out in Iowa. Hundreds arrested there, thrown in prison, you know, for not having the right documents. And that was, I think, the country's largest producer of meat, the kosher meats out there. So, you know, a lot of that probably, no small portion, anyway, to New York. I mean, there's many stories going on here at once, and they're not all jubilant. They're not all celebratory stories around this community in this country.
Well, that's why I think that it's important for I mean, that look, frankly, I have a piece on the air on Friday. I shouldn't be sitting here talking to you on the phone. I should be in the recording booth. But you know what? It's because I feel so strongly about, and I talk about this, we are living in a moment in history which is pivotal. And either you open your eyes and you become aware to what's happening and you become active. And active means talking about things. I mean, that's why when I interviewed Lynn and Olga the week before the nominations, I was telling them, I was like, you guys don't understand. I talk about this show all the time. Because to me, like Ugly Betty, another show that I talk about all the time, it's very subversive in the sense that it is simply saying we are alive, we are present, our stories are your stories. And at a moment in history when Latinos, yes, because who can tell who has papers and who doesn't have papers, you know, we have got to talk about this. And it does not only impact the Latino community. It affects us all as Americans. So that's why, I love it. To me, going to see this show makes me feel alive. It makes me feel hopeful. My daughter is just like, when are we going to go back again? But apart from that, there's something very political about this. And what's beautiful is that you're not getting hit on it, you know, hit over the head with it. You're simply living it, and you're realizing that you too identify with this story. What can be more powerful than that?
It's there within the Heights. Maria Hinojosa of Latino USA and Now, and One-on-One Emmy Award winning with Maria Hinojosa. Thanks very much for being with us from New York. You're great. Thanks a lot
pleasure.
For joining
Congratulations.
Us.
Congratulations. I love you guys. You're great. Congratulations.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Nice to meet you.
Hey, let's hear a little more. Here's Usnavi's cousin, Sonny, in In the Heights, played by Robin De Jesus, dreaming about what he would do if he won the lottery. Listen for the politics.
Yo, we're 96,000. I finally fixed housing. Give the body more computers with wireless web browsing. Your kids are living without a good education. Change the station. Teach them about gentrification. The rate is escalating. What? The rich are penetrating. What? We pay our corporations when we should be demonstrating. What about immigration? What? Politicians be hating. What? Racism in this nation gone from latent to blatant. Woo! I'll cash my ticket and bigger. Invest in protest. Never lose my focus till the city takes notice. And you know this, man. I'll never sleep because the ghetto has a million promises for me to keep. You are so cute.
I was just thinking off the top of my head.
Robin De Jesus in the Heights. Let's get a call from Covington, Louisiana, and Pam. Hi, Pam. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Great.
I just have to say that I saw this about a week and a half ago in New York, and I was totally blown away. I have a friend whose grandparents are from Cuba. I have a cousin whose grandparents are from Puerto Rico. I'm African-American. The energy in the audience was sensational. People were crying in tears, and I can't wait to get the CD.
Hey, Pam, what do you think made the people cry? What is it? We heard Maria say that her husband, he hates musicals, and he cried. What flipped the trigger?
It was a tremendous passion and love that was just generated, and it just took over the place. I had chills. I didn't know what to expect. I heard some people say, well, you know, it's reminiscent of West Side Story and blah, blah, blah. It just totally was fantastic.
Pam,
I have to thank, everybody.
More thumbs up there. They're from Louisiana. Pam, thanks very much for that. Let's get one more call here from Madison, Connecticut. Meg, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I was calling to say I had the opportunity to see this both off-Broadway and then recently on Broadway with my family. And I have a couple comments. Oh, of course, we thought the show was great. The dancing was a lot fancier on Broadway. But in any case,
that's what happens when you go to Broadway, you know. Things get fancy.
But it was good off-Broadway. But what I was going to say is that, you know, it's so wonderful to see a show, a mainstream show about any Latino group in which the main characters are not all gang members. And it's pretty rare. although I admit that there is Ugly Betty on the road. If you think of the two other musicals on Broadway about Latinos, both of them were about gang members. And that's obviously just a minuscule percentage.
You're talking West Side Story and Cape Man, Paul Simon's?
Cape Man, right.
Mm-hmm. Meg, our time grows short, but thanks very much for that. Tommy Cale, Lin-Manuel Miranda, and Kiara have both said, I think, that one of the things they hoped to do was to have a musical about Latinos that wasn't built around switchblades and gangs.
Yes. I mean, you know, Lin was very influenced by both of those shows that the caller mentioned, as were we all. And I think that he really wanted to write a show that he would want to be in. Now, Lin, of course, wasn't intending on playing Usnavi, so he says.
Yeah.
But I think that there was something about, you know, about trying to tell a story that was his view and was Kiara's view and was honest to that view of what their experience was. And you know, and I think that, you know, that was really the task at hand, was trying to, you know, to respect that.
Yeah, and, you know, it was interesting to hear Maria talk about the show and to use the word subversive, which made me smile, because it did feel like, you know, the story I told earlier about my grandma keeping her doors open, you know, that the amount of trust that took in an urban environment felt, always seemed like a subversive act to me, though to her it seemed second nature. And I think just keeping, as we worked on draft after draft and to tell a story that's kind of about love and about redemption, felt slightly subversive in a really fun way.
Well, you've mixed it up big time and got everybody's attention. 13 Tony nominations. That's something all on its own, and we congratulate you. Kiara Hudes wrote the book for In the Heights, is up for a Tony. Kiara, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
And Thomas Cale, director of In the Heights, also up for an Emmy, like practically every other angle on this show. Tommy Cale, thank you very much for being with us from New York.
I appreciate it. It was my pleasure.
Listeners, you can continue the conversation at our website, onpointradio.org. We'll go out with more of Blackout from In the Heights. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.